You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
That song is called Real Men, and you might remember a few weeks ago on this very program we had a chat to Peter Charlton, who's the president of the Waverley Men's Shed. And we're actually going to have a further chat with him in a couple of weeks' time. But on a similar theme today, we're going to have a chat with a group called Mentoring Men. Now, we know that the pressures of modern life can often feel pretty overwhelming, and the importance of connection, guidance and support can't be overstated. Mentoring Men is a not-for-profit organisation, and it stepped into this space with a mission to provide free, life-changing, one-on-one mentoring for men. The program is designed to help men navigate life's challenges, to foster resilience, and build a sense of purpose and well-being through meaningful relationships. At the helm of this transformative initiative is Philip Gamma E. Silva, who is the CEO of Mentoring Men, and also helping to steer this ship is Peter Ulmer, a long-term mentor with Mentoring Men. With a combined wealth of experience and a deep commitment to improving men's mental health and overall quality of life, Philippe and Peter have been instrumental in driving the organisation's growth and impact, and their leadership reflects a passion for fostering authentic connections and addressing the often underserved needs of men in our communities. Now, today, I have the very special privilege of speaking with Philippe and Peter to learn more about the vital work being done at Mentoring Men, because I want to understand how the organisation pairs mentors and mentees, the core principles guiding their approach, and also the tangible difference they've been able to make in the lives of countless individuals. Philippe Gamma E. Silva and Peter Ulmer join me in the studio now. Gents, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How wonderful of you to come in today.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay, first of all, when was it started? When was Mentoring Men started? Why and for whom?
Right. Look, man, we've been around for about 6 years now, and it was really founded, well, by our founder, Ian Westmoreland, who he himself was looking for a mentor and realised that there wasn't really any mentoring services out there for men. And so he took it upon himself to establish the organisation.
When was that, did you say?
Approaching seven this year.
So the mission that he formed still guides the organisation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So the whole notion around mentoring men is to journey alongside someone. And so when someone reaches out to us, we think about mental health, we think about well-being, but fundamentally, you don't have to be at a crisis point to seek a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
We all go through our life wobbles and our life challenges, and it's pretty normal to just need someone in your corner.
And so what is the aim? It's obviously not to provide professional service. We'll get to that later. What is the fundamental aim of the organisation?
Look, it depends on who we're talking to, right? So if we're talking about to government, we're going to say, what are all these outcomes? What are the metrics and what are the impacts of mentoring itself? But fundamentally, it's to build resilience in community. It's to offer blokes just someone that's in their corner, willing to listen to their story and willing to accept that. We have this saying in Mentoring Men, which is that unconditional positive regard. And so it's to create that safe space within sets of boundaries, of course, that enable men to share their story and enable men to overcome and to journey through whatever's niggling at them, whatever's causing them sort of concern.
Do you, in your experience over the six years that you've been running, is there any more relevance now compared with when Mr. Westmoreland first put his hand up?
Oh, that's a good question. More relevance, perhaps not. Perhaps it's just that we know more about it now. Like, we know one in four blokes across Australia feel as though they don't have anyone in their lives to talk to, that we're going through this, despite the fact that we've never been so connected through technology. We're going through a loneliness crisis with men in Australia.
Okay. Before we get to the stories of the men themselves, tell us about the organisation, the structure of the organisation.
I'll do it. So structurally, what we do is we have...
No, hang on. I'm talking about the structure of the organisation. In other words, you're the CEO.
Oh, sorry. Yep. So,
and you mentioned government. What role do they play?
Yep.
And you're not a corporate. You don't have shareholders.
No.
Okay. It's that sort of structure I want to come to grips with.
So we're a registered not-for-profit charity with ACNC. So we've got our DGR status. We've got a board that oversees, that I'm accountable to as CEO. And then from there, within the organisation, operationally, we're supported by a few paid staff, and then a whole host of volunteers as well. And the delivery of our support, our mentoring, is all delivered through volunteer mentors.
Right. Does the government have any involvement or say in how your operation works?
But they definitely have involvement in as much as they're a key funding body that enable us to keep our doors open and provide our service.
You're talking federal government here, aren't you?
At the moment, it's state. So right. It's actually public health networks where we receive the most.
Okay.
So that's federal funding, but it gets distributed locally to public health networks that then dictate where they want their funds to go to support their communities.
Okay. And also from a high level view rather than the detail, how many people do you think the organisation assists right now?
Right. Well, just so for 2024, for last year, we supported over 607 active relationships.
Wow.
So that's it, give or take a one-to-one ratio. Some mentors might have more than one mentee. But
670, even if
607, apologies.
Oh, beg your pardon, 607.
Well, we can round it up if we want to put on a sales spin on it.
Well, I mean, we just mentioned the funding you're going to get from government, so you go for it. That implies, even if it's 1.5 mentors per mentee, that is to say mentees to mentor, that still implies a very hefty number of mentors.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, but it's a good point that you raise, right? Because one thing is the support that we provide the mentees, and I'm sure Peter will
get
speak
to that
to
with
it
Peter in a moment.
In a minute. But it's also what the mentors get out of it too, right? So it's a two-way relationship as they're journeying with each other.
You're treading on Peter's toes now.
I won't let him.
I'm going to get to that in a moment.
A minute.
I just want you to tell us what areas you operate, geographical areas you operate in.
Yeah, so we support men, so mentees. We support men from all across the country. So right. We've got some we've supported and will continue to support blokes from some of the most remotest places in this country.
Mm.
With mentors, we're really focusing on New South Wales, ACT and Victoria. Of course, in the future, our ambition is to re-engage the rest of the states and grow this to a wild dreams, but maybe one day a household name. Who knows?
Right, right, indeed. And Neutral Bay... You've got an operation.
I might let Peter. Yeah. That is definitely his.
He's champing.
Bread and butter.
Peter's champing at the bit. Peter, go ahead. You're a mentor.
I am.
And I want you to tell us where the mentors come from. But before you do, tell us the areas in which you guys operate.
Well, the two areas that I'm heavily involved in are there's a men's group in Paddington meeting at the Imperial Hotel in Paddington once a month. And the group that I'm heavily involved in, which is the one at the Oaks in Neutral Bay, both have typically between about 8 and 16 men coming on a monthly basis.
Mm. So it meets monthly?
Meets monthly, yep.
Right. And there's another one at Manly?
There is another one at Manly. I'm not involved in that group. But
it's maybe, about monthly as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. So we've got three active groups.
Okay. So tell us what the criteria are for the men who become mentors. What sort of background? I mean, is there a recruitment process?
There is.
How does that work?
So you, as a mentor, you go to the website, you fill in the form, you then get...
But hang on. Nobody's going to go to the website unless they know to go to the website.
That's true.
So how do people know to go to the... How do people put their hand up to become a mentor? Wasn't a trick question.
No.
A lot of it is, so mentors, I mean, some of it is just word of mouth by virtue.
Right.
And then we'll advertise predominantly just through your normal social media channels.
Okay. So give us some criteria. What do you look for in people who do put their hand up?
People who have life experience is always very important. People who fulfill... certain social criteria, who have experience, just generally solid life experience. Also, business experience is helpful. So those areas then allow us to, down the track, go through the matching process because you break, obviously, those business and social areas down to smaller components.
I imagine time would probably be a criteria.
I'm retired. Many are retired, but that is important.
And the fact that they need to listen more than they talk. The Lord gave us two ears and one mouth.
I know that one. I'm a salesman. That's my background.
Right. So one of the major functions of a mentor is to shut up and listen, right?
Absolutely true. I mean, there are three areas that I'm... That get drummed into you when you go through your training process. One is just to be present, to be physically there, to be wholly there for your mentee. Secondly, exactly what you just said, Alan, you shut up and listen. It's not about you yabbering on and interrupting. It's about them having that space where they can communicate to you and you just listen. And thirdly, don't judge. This is a space where if they trust the mentor, they can be vulnerable and know that vulnerability is not going to be judged or damaged in any way. So they're the three key criteria.
I would have thought that judgment is key. As soon as you indicate a judgment, you're stuffed, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've often thought, you know, we're in a very chatty world. Where's a safe space for a man to be able to talk in an uninterrupted fashion?
Hmm.
There are opinion pieces in the newspaper. Everybody's an influencer. You know, yak, 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 yak. Where is my opportunity to sit down with another man and have a quiet conversation and not be interrupted and get my thoughts across?
Right, because it would seem to me that a lot of people coming out of the corporate world or a lot of people who would like to put their hand up don't actually know. Mm. They're possibly more interested in teaching And that's not what you've just described.
No, we're not counsellors. We're not. I'm certainly not a professional psychotherapist, psychologist, coach, counsellor. That's not my background.
Okay, so if you do get somebody in from the corporate world and they come and say, "Look, I've just finished running lots of companies," as indeed you have in your past, how do you train them?
That's a great question, because so much of my job was talking and
that's
giving
right.
information and allowing people to make decisions.
Right.
So the hardest thing for me as a mentor was exactly what you said, Alan, to learn to shut up and literally...
Would you stop repeating the fact that I use that language?
Yeah, it's very hard for a salesman to stop talking. So here we are in a situation where you literally need to be quiet.
Okay, so
and take on board what that person's saying.
So somebody's come to you, they have what you think are adequate qualifications, you train them up a little bit, and presumably you do that, or Philippe, you do it, or somebody does.
We've got a full-time trainer.
Okay, so the trainer trains them up, they're still interested, they're still keen. Next in the progression of events is, how do you then match a mentee with a mentor?
There are a number of criteria. There is geography, obviously, because we want men to be able to get together, because obviously the best relationships are the physical ones where they're close, in close proximity. We look for let me give you an example. A colleague of mine had gone through a divorce. He was then matched up with another man who was about to go through that journey.
Right.
So he could then take him through his experience of that. So life experience is obviously very important. Age comes into it.
Yep.
Look, you've nailed it, absolutely. Yeah. There are a few other sort of just basic things. What do we think is going to allow for that relationship to flourish? Mm. So it might be lived experience, as Peter said, but even down just to the basics of shared interests. What footy teams do they both go for? What hobbies do they both have? Some of those easy icebreakers that enable that first conversation to kick off.
Right, because it's interesting... does race or, people of opposite, not opposite, but differing races, tell us a little bit about the need that men from, for example, Aboriginal backgrounds, or indeed, Arabic, and I think you've got a story to tell me about Arab.
Absolutely. So those cultural considerations do come into play. But again, it comes down to what they're looking for in the same token, right?
So, do they know when they come to you?
We would ask questions to unpack on that. So there are some behavioural questions and goal-setting questions that we try to understand with the mentee. One of them last year was a new migrant from Brazil. And so he had indicated he was struggling with finding mates, and so he was looking to really get support around integrating into his new community. And so it was within that relationship, he sort of identified that he wanted someone that had grown up in the area for their entire lifetime. Vice versa, there will be people that will seek to, whether it be culturally from where they're from or even based off faith and beliefs, or even how they identify as specifically, sexuality identifications as well.
Right, and that provides no conflict with a mentor?
We would seek to match accordingly.
Right.
So there are rules, what we would call, not everyone can become a mentor.
Right.
And not everyone can become a mentee.
Mm-hmm.
So where we know that what we do is so intrinsically important, but we also know that as much as we may seek to do good, we can also do significant harm if we don't get it right.
Okay.
And so we're unapologetic. If you represent values that the organization does not represent, then unfortunately we're not going to take that individual on board.
Okay, that's fair. I'm talking with Philippe Gamard e Silva, and who is the CEO, and Peter Ulmer, who is a mentor of the organization called Mentoring Men. What I wanted to talk to you about now, gents, is loneliness afflicts men more particularly after their retirement. Would that be your observation?
Yeah, look, it's after retirement, it's an interesting thing. Absolutely. It's what we see, of course, is, I guess, just those changes in key life transitions and phases. And so, logically speaking, after retirement, you're starting to lose that network of people that you would catch up with daily, that professional network. You might be empty nesters, whatever it might be. But interestingly enough, what we see at Mentoring Men is that the average age of the blokes that reach out for help is actually 38.
All right.
Significantly younger, whereas the average age of mentors is sitting around that 60 mark.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting dynamic. But you obviously form fairly close relationships when you're mentoring. Well, when I say obviously, I don't mean obviously, but my guess is it's possible to form fairly strong ties. Can you tell us about an example of the strong ties?
Yeah, look, I have a number of mentees in Mentoring Men and in another organisation I'm involved with. And it's very interesting to see the journey. Initially, it's just building up trust. So two men come together, they don't know each other. So trust is an integral part of moving forward with a relationship. Once trust is established, a whole raft of conversation then opens up.
Tell us about Peter Spicer.
Peter Spicer joined Mentoring Men after me, and Peter's one of my closest friends recently passed away from pancreatic cancer. Peter was involved with a number of charities, and Mentoring Men was one of them. He was involved in making videos, making cartoons. He had a couple of mentees, and he was just an all-round great guy. Gone too soon.
If you could play a song for him, what would it be?
He loved the B-52s. He loved travelling. And I thought Rome would be a really good one for him.
Let's keep that running in the background just so we can keep thinking of Peter then.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us how the service you provide relates to the professional services that some men may need.
It's a really good call out there. We provide, you know, what we would call non-clinical support, just everyday blokes supporting other everyday blokes with the training that we give them. And there's a space there that for some people that works and that's all they need. But absolutely, if there are more complex issues and concerns at bay, that then clinical supports, whether that be counselling, psychology, whatever else in between, might also be as more important than seeking mentoring. What we also have, though, is often blokes that are doing both. That they're going through their own journey and they're seeking that help, and they've got that person in their corner being that mentor as they're going along that path for recovery and better well-being.
It's interesting also, my mentees tell me that even though they have professionals working obviously at a different level, the fact that they are with another man talking about those issues where there's no time constraint and no dollar constraint means there's a certain freedom that they have. And I'm told that it's a very different experience.
Right.
It's a complimentary experience.
Yeah, it's something powerful in that. Like, let's not forget, this is a free service delivered by blokes who are giving up their time. And when we start to talk about seeking help, you know, if you're going to go down a mental health care plan, if you're going to seek clinical help, it's critically important, absolutely. And anyone who's thinking that, I'd encourage them to do that. But the reality is we're also in an environment where you might be waiting up to 6 months to get that support that you need. The beauty with us is that we have so many men ready to rock and roll and support another bloke that you wouldn't be waiting 6 days.
Well, it's an amazing service that you provide, and there is so much more we need to cover that we don't have time for, that I'm going to suggest that you guys come back in and have another chat to us in a little while, because I think it's important. We've also got the men's shed coming back in a couple of weeks, but sometime after that, would you join me again and continue the discussion?
Yeah, absolutely.
Love to.
Thank
that
you.
Would be terrific. Thanks, Alan.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Philippe Gamard e Silva, who is the CEO, and Peter Ulmer, who is a mentor for Mentoring Men. And I'm delighted that they could both come into the studio, and we look forward to seeing them again. So thank you both for coming in.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.